Excellent. All right. That's the Kozilek voice.
Nate Stodgy.
God, it hurts, dude.
Phil, Nate, how would you describe the sound of that distortion?
It's great.
In my profession as a mental health worker, I have
Nate
counseling.
What is Nate doing? Nate, stop!
Nate, stop raping my ears! You can. Oh, Kozilek's here.
Kozilek's
joined us.
I'm Phil DeLuca. Oh, God. I'm Phil DeLuca.
I'm Nate Burgess.
And I am Sean Watson.
Watson. And we are somehow Commander in. Yeah! Thanks for listening, everybody. We're going to put a spotlight on community issues, but never, ever talk about three banned topics: religion, politics, and Hearthstone. Remember to check us out on Twitter at CommanderInMTG and talk to us there. We have a wonderful show lined up for our listeners this week. We're going to highlight some of the Oath of the Gatewatch cards, also known as Guardians of the Gate to See, that we think will work in Commander.
Look, we mentioned that name, alternative name, to Ethan Fleischer, the set's lead designer, and he didn't disagree.
He did not disagree.
It was a fine name. And I'm accepting that as an approval of that name.
Indeed. This set, of course, features the assembly of the Justice League. I mean, the Guardians of the Gate to See. I mean, the Gatewatch.
The Super Friends.
Where four Super Friends band together to face off against multiplanar threats. But first, we have a little bit of news. The Mothership, which is the main Wizards website, has started a new column which sort of summarizes the happenings in the community. It's called Daily MTG.
We'll provide a link in the show notes.
Yeah, why don't we do that, Sean?
Yeah, that's a good idea.
But the link won't just be to any of them. It will be to the second one ever. Well, the second of the new series. They're kind of revamping the Daily MTG column. Because we were linked to it. Our show with Ethan Fleischer was linked on the Mothership. It's wonderful. So now we're regular readers of the Daily MTG column, just in case we get mentioned again, which probably won't happen for a very long time. But that's the second time, third time, actually, counting your name check, right?
Yeah.
And so that's the third time we're mentioned on the Mothership. We're very proud of that, and we're very pleased by it. So thank you, Mothership writers!
Yeah, it's really cool, and I liked the dry plug nature of the plug they gave us. Made me laugh. So their writer,
yeah,
is an amusing person. Yes,
yeah, that's written by Blake Rasmussen. I hope I'm pronouncing that right.
That is a good name.
Yeah, I've always loved the name Rasmussen.
The child of Alara Rasmussen. So
now, Sean, you have at least one recent funny moment you want to talk about, don't you?
Yeah, just I needed to apologize to regular listener Chris Thacker. But you know, when you play Commander and certain moments in games just stick out in your head and make you smile, but then teach everyone what to do or not to do in certain moments. So I was playing a three-way game with a friend of the show, Robin Cass, and Chris, obviously, because I just mentioned him. He's got a suited and booted, Chris's is, suited and booted Micaeus the Unhallowed. He's indestructible. He's hexproof. He's going to bring everything back in a Crash the Blood-braided deck and make us all cry. And he's the only creature out for Chris. Chris plays a Fleshbag Marauder to clear out my Silumgar, I think it was, and give someone back their Tamio the Moonsage I was controlling. I have Vidalcan Shackles out. Tap the Vidalcan Shackles whilst the Fleshbag Marauder's trigger is still on the stack. Take the Fleshbag Marauder, sacrifice it, and say, you can sacrifice your Micaeus now.
That's great.
Like, people needed more of an excuse to despise my Silumgar deck. I'm sorry, Chris.
Yeah, your Silumgar deck is brutal.
Yeah, funny things you can do with Vidalcan Shackles. Taking someone's Fleshbag Marauder / Merciless Executioner whilst its trigger is still on the stack. Tip top. Any funny moments for you guys in playing?
I don't have a funny moment. And around Christmas time, Natalie Vervey alerted us to an artist who was giving out free custom tokens. So I immediately followed the artist on Twitter. His Twitter handle is at Revarian, and we'll include that in the show notes as well. And customized or commissioned a custom token. And of course, I said, I'm just looking for a squirrel that simultaneously looks cute and vicious. And he sent it. I received it. I was number 8 of 25 custom tokens he made. And it's fantastic. I'll include an image in our show notes as well. Just so funny. It's a squirrel wearing a Sith's robe carrying a double-bladed lightsaber. And the lightsaber is red. Everything else is done in just black and white line art. Except for, again, the lightsaber is double-bladed red, and there are moons or suns in the sky. And those are colored, like, orange. Fun. I immediately thought of you guys.
All right.
Yeah. Yeah. Since you guys represent, at the very least, half of the Grixis Sith faction. Each, I mean. Well, Sean identifies as Dimir, and you identify as Rakdos.
You don't think I'm a Sith?
Oh, I think you're a Sith.
All right.
I do. I think you're definitely a Grixis player, but if we force you to choose, I think it comes down to wanton destruction.
It's not wanton.
No, you're wanton
it's
destruction.
It's strategic and tactical.
That's
see,
true.
it's like comparing Sith villains. So Darth Vader, if he sees a problem, then he needs to fix it. Like if Fleet Admiral Ozzel comes out of hyperspace too early, then you need a new Fleet Admiral. Or if Captain Piet loses the Millennium Falcon, then you promote Captain Nita.
That's right.
See, Vader finds problems in the organization and he fixes them. But Kylo Ren, he smashes up a computer console. What did that computer console do? Was it inefficient? No. He's losing control. He's not a respectable Sith villain. He's going to Dooku out in the first 15 minutes of the second movie.
What do you mean by Dooku out?
He's got played up in the movie immediately preceding, and now he's going to get whacked by one of the Jedi, probably Luke Skywalker, in the first 10 or 15 minutes of the next episode.
We can't talk about this right now. I mean, we could talk about it, but it's not going to make it to air because we can't spoil. We have to do a total spoiler warning on this discussion.
Well, then put it at the end. Just put it after the outro music and say, spoiler.
We could, but this is worthy of an entire episode. Okay, so on to Oath of the Gatewatch. Or, as we've said many times, Guardians of the Gate to Sea. There were some new mechanics introduced. We've already covered them, so I'll just restate them briefly. The first new quote-unquote mechanic is colorless, represented by a lozenge or asteroid shape. And that just means that whenever you see that shape, it requires colorless mana. If you ever see a number in a circle, That means it requires generic mana, so you can pay for it with any kind of mana, including colorless. But if you see the colorless symbol, it requires colorless mana.
Mm-hmm.
A little pat on the back there for Sean. Sean, you predicted exactly that reading.
Yep.
And so we have the next mechanic is Cohort. And that's basically you tap the creature with Cohort and another ally creature, and you get a benefit. And it works as Sean, again, Sean, what is with you recently? stop with the insightful comments because...
it's just not used to it.
No, but it was wonderful. And Ethan Fleischer, of course, appreciated your pointing out that this is a lot like a defensive battalion. It would be great for Boros, assuming Boros has any kind of defensive line and doesn't just go running aggressively at their opponents. The next mechanic is support, followed by a number. So support N, and when this enters the battlefield, whenever this thing enters the battlefield or is cast, you put a +1/+1 counter on up to that number target creatures. Kind of like a limited Cathar's Crusade.
Kind of like Bolster. But yeah, you can't put more than one counter on a creature.
Right.
Bolster was a Bolster N, wasn't it? Ability. Yeah.
Yeah.
Hmm.
And the last new mechanic is Surge. And that just means cast a spell before this one. You or a teammate cast a spell before this one. And the spell gets cheaper and probably has additional benefits. There are some wonderful cards, and I think we're talking about at least one of them coming up. On to the cards. If you guys don't mind, I'll start with this first one here.
It's a good one to start with, Phil.
Yeah, it's a good one. It's the Eldrazi Displacer. For 2 and a white Eldrazi. You get a 3/3 Eldrazi creature. It has, of course, Devoid, so it has no color. But it has an activated ability for 2 and a Lozenge, or Asteroid, or colorless mana. For 2 and a colorless mana, exile another target creature, then return it to the battlefield tapped under its owner's control.
Blinky the Eldrazi.
That's right, Blinky the Eldrazi. Blinky is going to find a home in a lot of decks with creatures that have enter the battlefield effects. My rune deck, as soon as I can acquire a Blinky, it's going into my rune deck. And sure, you know, you can use it offensively to kind of get your opponent's creatures out of the way. And in limited, that's probably what you're going to do with it. Here, though, we have a lot of enter the battlefield effects, and we're going to use it on our Hornet Queens.
An important thing to note on this card, because there are other cards that do this effect in Magic, but all of them, I think, tap. This doesn't tap.
Yeah, this doesn't tap.
Which is unbelievably good.
Yes.
It's and it's another target creature. It's not another target creature you control.
That's right. So it's flexible. You can use it to boost your own side. Again, if you need additional squadrons of Hornets, or if you want to give your opponents extra elephants.
Your opponents just cast any number of theft spells. Graveyard recursion from your opponent's graveyard spells just get something back when someone's homed your homeward path. This goes into every Selesnya deck. Get those Eternal Witnesses flickering.
Yeah, pretty much.
Brago, I wouldn't see a reason. I can't think of a reason why you wouldn't put it in there.
Yeah, it's great even as anti-control if you just want to drop this into a white deck. All right, let's not dwell, shall we? Let's get a lot of cards to run through. Nate, what's your first card?
My first card was spoiled early, and it's a legendary creature. It's Aili Eternal Pilgrim. Aili Eternal Pilgrim for just a white and a black. Legendary creature, core cleric, 2/3 with Death Touch. That's handy. And it's got some powers. If you pay 1, you sacrifice another creature, you gain life equal to the sacrificed creature's toughness. Another power, 1 and a white and a black, sacrifice another creature, exile target non-land permanent. Activate this ability only if you have at least 10 life more than your starting life total. So Ailey goes into the usual suspect life gain decks such as Aloro, Karloff, and even Vishkal. It probably goes into most Taysa decks too, since they have plenty of sacrificial creatures. Now, I could see a cleric tribal with, yes, Shadowborn Apostles and demons and something to do with life gain. Not the best card of the set, and maybe not even the best legendary creature, in my opinion, but it's goes into a lot of decks.
Certainly flavorful.
It's for two mana for all of that. You've got three abilities on there. The two of the abilities synergize with each other very well. I'm tempted to run this as a... put it into the Karloff deck and then decide whether it's going to be her or Karloff as my commander.
Right.
Like, I think it's...
yeah, some decks are interchangeable like that.
Yeah, I think she's not quite as brutal as Karloff, because Karloff can get the commander damage kill in pretty fast. So I think in a nicer, quote-unquote softer game, she becomes the commander, and then see what opponent's playing. If they're being super spiky, put Karloff in. She's brilliant. I want a couple of copies of her.
You could shift gears to the table.
Everybody's supposed to reveal the commander at the same time, so you can't do that.
No, I don't mean like look at it. No, but judging the players.
Well, suppose you go to a commander game, and you're going to play multiple games with the same group. So the first game, you bring out your pace car, and you see what the table's doing. And then if they're extra spiky, then you put in Karloff as the head. And if they're not, then you put in Ailey.
Yeah. So if I go to my LGS, the first deck I play with any night, if I don't know who I'm sitting with, is normally Maelstrom Wanderer.
That's your intro?
Yeah, because even though it's powerful, it is fun because it's just big creatures, isn't it? It's not like trying to stop the opponents playing magic and all that sort of thing. It's just I'm going to put dudes out and swing with them.
Right.
Right, like I could swap out, instead of playing Krenko as the head, I could play Purphoros.
Correct. Oh, you could if you don't want friends. But yes, a very good example, Nate. But yeah, Ailey. We're sticking with Ailey, aren't we? Ailey's A+. I think she's going to be a commander for years to come.
Yeah, she's quite good. She is quite good. Sean, what is your first card?
I've done what I always do and picked a mono-red card as my first pick.
Because there are so many good mono-red cards.
There are. Chandra Flamecaller. I'll quickly read her. She's 4/2 red for a Planeswalker Chandra, enters the battlefield with 4 loyalty. Her +1 ability is put 2/3/1 red elemental creature tokens of haste onto the battlefield, exile them at the beginning of the next end step. Her 0 ability, which is the good one, discard all the cards in your hand, then draw that many cards +1. And her minus X ability is Chandra Flinkle does X damage to each creature. So when we had Jimmy Wong on, I discussed how I don't think there's been a really good, like super good mono red planeswalker. I think we've found our queen. This is great. You've got card draw in red. It's a 0 ability. Fantastic. It Wheel of Fortunes plus gives you an extra card and doesn't do it to all your opponents as well. Her +1 abilities. Pretty nice. It can be used as a finisher. 2/3/1s flying at someone, smash them in the face. And her minus X ability, I mean, it's not brilliant, but 6 mana to do 4 damage to every creature on the table can be, in our format, especially if you're fighting against token decks, etc., really, really relevant. If someone has got a Beastmaster Ascension out and it doesn't have the tokens on it and you know they're going to do stuff, you can drop Chandra in your turn and wipe them, or if it's all just getting out of hand with weenies across the table, that is relevant. This is a really solid, decent card. I can't think of a mono-red Planeswalker better than this one.
Yeah, she's really good. She was among the leaks that we saw earlier before the spoiler season began, and I had hopes that she was real, so.
And she was.
And she has the text along the bottom that says Chandra Flamecaller can serve as your commander, right?
Nope.
No, she doesn't.
No.
I'm not sure we're ever
as the
see
mono
that
red
again.
Guy at well, as the token mono red guy here, probably I'd be more interested if she cost less mana.
Yeah. Yeah, she is pretty pricey.
See that, yeah, six for a plane, any planeswalker is pretty big. They've got to do something huge, like Sorin Markov levels of huge for six mana. But I think that zero ability may justify that cost.
Yeah, I think by turn six in a typical mono red deck, you're almost out of cards, right? Unless you've already restocked it with some other effect.
That zero ability puts her in every Niv-Mizzet deck, because then you draw your entire hand plus one, and
right,
everyone takes damage. The plus one probably puts her in a lot of Purphoros decks as well. The minus X doesn't do much for me.
Yeah, the minus, I mean, it is a Planeswalker Ultimate that you can get off immediately, which is often nice. Because unless it's me playing against Nick Jaragoski, most people don't tend to get Planeswalker Ultimates off. So she kind of has an extra ability over most Planeswalkers.
Yeah, I don't know how you managed to do that.
Over and over again. Sorry, Nick. Just, what can I say? It's always Narset Transcendent as well. What can I say? The magic gods don't want you to play non-creature spells. We've seen what you do with them.
Yeah, he's just not permitted.
Anyway, moving on to Phil, what's your next choice?
My next card is, I feel a little bit like I'm channeling Nate with all of the Eldrazi I've selected.
Yeah, this next one, I like this one.
Yeah, this next one is Endbringer. For 5 and a colorless mana, you get a 5/5 Eldrazi. It says, untap Endbringer during each other player's untap step. So, okay, this is... this is lovely. We know how we like to untap things on each other player's untap step. It has an ability, which is particularly relevant there. Tap, Endbringer deals 1 damage to target creature or player. Okay, so he's tapping. Here's another one. For colorless and tap, target creature can't attack or block this turn. Very useful, because you get to use it every turn. And then for colorless and tap, or 1 soul ring... and tap, you draw a card. I like this card because it changes something fundamental about the game. Most people will tap their colorless mana sources first and kind of use them to pad out, saving their colored mana sources for whatever shenanigans they're up to or casting spells later. This reverses that. If you've got an Endbringer out, you actually become hesitant to use your Soul Ring instead of tapping it right away. Right? The kind of unspoken rule is you tap your mana rocks first because they are very vulnerable compared to your lands. Here, we're going to see a lot of Soul Rings left up when Endbringer is out.
Yeah, this guy is a toolbox of shenanigans that you can use every turn. And if you're making a colorless deck... this is your Prophet of Kruphix.
It is, yeah.
Yeah.
I think this card might be one that sees a lot of play in Commander in general. I was really happy to see it didn't have colored mana cost in it, although I think if they'd made that for a red and a blue, that would be still appropriate, because it's very Izzet-y in its abilities.
It's true.
If I mean, even if it didn't untap during each player's untap step, that's still a 5/5 or 6 that you can instant speed tap it for 2 colours to draw a card or stop an attack or a blocker. So it's got political ramifications as well.
Yeah, it does.
I think this is going to see play.
That first
all over
ability
the place.
Gets your attention.
Yeah. It's a good card, but the first ability makes me say it's a great card for Commander.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact it's colourless means I'm probably going to buy a couple of these.
Yeah.
By a couple, I mean a couple of play sets. At least one play set.
Yeah, there's almost no reason, because we use so many lands that generate, and other and rocks that generate colorless mana. There's almost no reason not to play Endbringer.
Yeah, he's really good. Yeah. Yeah, he's going to become a card that I'm going to have to find an excuse not to have in a deck. Because even as a 5/5 creature, that's a fairly solid body.
Yeah, yeah, it's relevant all around. It's quite good. You can attack with it, untap on your opponent's step, cause something not to be able to attack, untap on your next opponent's step, draw two cards, right? I mean, your options are great. Your options are great.
They certainly are. Mm.
And,
yeah,
that art.
That art's fantastic.
He's got a fancy hat.
He does. Speaking of fancy hats, Nate's next card has a fancy hat and a fancy vest.
Ooh, it's a vest made of tentacle arms. Yeah, World
like
Breaker.
Horseshoe crab legs.
Ooh. Yeah. World Breaker for 6 and a green. It's a creature, Eldrazi 5/7. Devoid. This card has no color. Yeah, whatever. When you cast World Breaker, exile target, artifact, enchantment, or land. Oh, and he's got reach.
Mm.
Oh, and two and a diamond. Sacrifice a land. Return World Breaker from your graveyard to your hand. So in Animar, Soul of Elements, for a single green, I get a 5/7 with reach. And Phil, your Cabal Coffers can go away.
Oh.
Or Sean, your Darksteel Forge can go away. Or whoever's got Mana Echoes, get that out of here. Yeah.
Bye-bye, Grave Pact.
Yeah. Just a single green. I mean, even if it's not an Eldrazi Tribal Animar, in which case, what are you even doing? Come on. Look at the Reese Eldrazi. Look at him. Take your Animar deck and look at the Eldrazi. Moving on.
Wow. Sean, that's you.
That is me.
I knew when this card was published that you were going to like it.
Yes, this is continuing my theme of picking mythic rares with giant casting costs. Sphinx of the Final Word. He is 5/2 blue for a creature, Sphinx, 5/5. Sphinx of the Final Word cannot be countered. He's a Sphinx, so of course he flies. He has hexproof. And instant and sorcery spells you control cannot be countered by spells or abilities.
Yeah, that's ugly.
I like his flavor text. He answers the questions as readily as he asks them, but his answer is always no.
No. The thing is, I saw this card, but I wasn't that impressed because in our meta, aside from Pete and Andy Hull, we don't have a lot of counter spells going on.
We don't have a lot, that's true. I have noticed there's more things like Glenlandra Archmage and stuff creeping into decks. And when you absolutely need to hammer that Rise of the Dark Realms through, this gets it through. I mean, a 5/5 flyer hexproof is still pretty good that can't be countered. It's pretty good. 7 is a little bit overcosted, but hexproof is very relevant. And it just, in a control strategy, it's like putting on a safe, warm comforter. You just know everything's going to work. And I agree, in our meta, it's not the most powerful, but at my local gaming store and random pickups, counters are a lot more prevalent. So, yeah, I just think it's going to be relevant. 7's a little costly, though. I'd rather it be 5.
All right. Maybe my experience is just insulated.
Yeah, maybe. I think this goes into every Mizzix, or possibly every Izzet deck, that just as a protection. Mizzix especially. I know everything that works well with instants and sorcery should go into Mizzix, but I think this might be one of the few creatures you put into Mizzix.
Yeah, just that ability to protect all of your spells from the random counter. Because even though I don't run a lot of them, I do run occasional counter spells in my blue decks.
I will say that Hexproof is big in our meta, and a 5/5 flying Hexproof is not to be scoffed at.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I find with the Mizzix deck that it tends to have a turn where it's going to go and win, and if you can stall that turn with a counter spell, is a good example because most of its instances are sorceries. It sometimes runs out of gas. You just need to hit the right counter, the right card draw spell, I find. You need to stop that deck from refilling its hand. And this stops the Mizzix player from having to worry about that. He just says, "Hey, I'm going to get this killer turn where I just go off and win off." Unless you play like some people and do a half an hour turn and don't win.
Yeah, that's brutal when somebody does that. Oh my god.
Well, they've won in a lot of ways because they've sapped your will to live and are presumably using that life force energy to power their own essence. Anyway, next card.
All right. My next card is the Oath of Gideon. For two and a white, you get a legendary enchantment. Woo! When Oath of Gideon enters the battlefield, put 2/1/1 white core ally creature tokens onto the battlefield. That's pretty good, even for three, but it's like, you know, sorcery speed. Each planeswalker you control enters the battlefield with an additional loyalty counter on it.
Hey, now.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
This is one of them cards that seems initial to the uninitiated doesn't seem that good.
Right.
But to those of us in the know go, that's amazing.
Yes. The word for Oath of the Gatewatch is bonkers.
Yeah.
This is one of the bonkers cards in the set. And I do like that flavor text. It's
put that into the context of why that's good for those that still aren't convinced, Phil.
Are you asking,
like,
planeswalkers getting an extra counter?
So, but how does that work in real terms? I'll explain what my. So, how that works in real terms, listeners, is there are a lot of planeswalkers that have been very balanced by their developers to have abilities that, like, either the ultimate or the secondary, the minus ability, that require a bit of work to get. For example, Soren Markov's a good example. He comes in at loyalty 5. But his minus 3 ability puts someone at 10 life. So you have to stall him for an additional turn and protect him before you can do a second player with that ability. Whereas if you've got an Oath of Gideon out, you've got to do it. You can do him activating 2 turns in a row without worrying. Or it takes you a whole extra turn. How many times have you sat in a game, listeners, and gone, "If I just have one more turn, I'll get the ultimate off on this planeswalker"?
Yeah,
I just need, I'm one loyalty short because of the way it was designed. This fixes that problem or speeds that planeswalker up considerably.
Yeah. We have all, I think, wanted to use Soren 2 turns in a row and couldn't. and now we can, for the low, low cost of finding room for Soren in a white-black deck.
And I don't think anyone's going to be destroying Oath of Gideon. It's not a card that comes down and people say, "Oh, I've got to kill that."
Yeah, it's not like a doubling season.
No.
Right. Yeah, it's just, this will get by unless you've got, unless you've built a dedicated Super Friends deck, in which case anybody with enchantment removal will take this out.
Yeah, that's true.
Right, because if you see somebody playing this in Commander, they've got a Super Friends deck. Don't let them use
planeswalkers, it. How many planeswalkers would you run in a non-Super Friends deck that would justify you putting this in a deck?
5.
Presume. Yeah, 5's the number I settled at. Nate?
Oh, what's the question?
if you were running Fallout and a planeswalker came into Battlefield.
How in your vault, if you were playing a non-Super Friends planeswalker, if you were playing a non-Super Friends deck, how many planeswalkers would you... What's the minimum number of planeswalkers you would run before putting Oath of Gideon into your deck?
Let me see how many planeswalkers are in my Mardu Allies deck. I think that number is probably 0.
Oh yeah, because this is putting your allies into play.
Yeah, it does. That, I think that's in the context of Mardu Allies. I'm going to look at that first ability and maybe consider this card. For 2 and a white to get 2 allies, that might actually be worth it by itself.
Yeah, so this is going in Brago, which runs 5 planeswalkers, and also can flicker the Oath of Gideon to keep getting more soldiers.
And if I'm making a Super Friends deck, I would want 5 colors, so it would go in a Super Friends deck, sure.
Yeah. Cool. So, yeah. Anyway, really good card. And it has Gideon holding his hand up and putting his hand over his, not his heart, not quite his heart. It's his left hand.
His solar plexus? Maybe on Theros, the heart is more central.
Yeah. Or he just likes touching his own solar plexus.
That's where I get my indestructibility.
Nate, what is your next card?
Okay, this is an interesting Eldrazi that I think I need to think about this one some more because it has suspected hidden potential. I think it's it can. There are probably some combos that I haven't thought about that can break games. Deceiver of Form, 6 and a diamond. Creature Eldrazi, 8/8. Hey, there you go. Hey, at the beginning of combat on your turn, reveal the top card of your library. Are you playing a creature-heavy deck? Do you like the creatures in your deck? Do you want all of the creatures on the field to be that creature? Hey, if a creature card is the top card of your library, you may have creatures you control other than Deceiver of Form become copies of that card until end of turn. Legendary things might, that could cause problems, but if you like Rite of Replication and you like Blade of Selves, then this guy...
You'll love Deceiver of Form.
You could build a Blade of Selves-style deck around this guy.
Yeah. I have a rules question for him that I don't know the answer for. So if I, let's say I have him in play and I reveal a Craterhoof Behemoth off the top of my deck, so all my creatures become Craterhoof Behemoth. So obviously it's not done anything because there's no Enter the Battlefield triggers there. In the same turn, if I then cast, I don't know, a Llanowar Elf... Does that Llanowar Elf enter the battlefield as a copy of Craterhoof Behemoth?
No, because it's creatures control.
It has to be creatures you control at the time.
Yeah.
So, okay, then the next question is, does it enter the battlefield as Llanowar Elf then become a Craterhoof Behemoth?
No.
Nope.
Okay.
Not if you cast it in your second main phase after combat.
Right. Or even flash it in. Does not count.
Well, if I flash it in whilst the Deceiver's trigger is still on the stack, it would.
Oh, yeah, that's right, beginning. Yeah.
Well,
it would become one, but it still won't enter the battlefield as a...
yeah, creator. You'd have to have flash to make this work. Sorry, I missed the... Let's imagine I had Vedalken Orrery out as well.
What works really well is Pathbreaker Ibex.
Yeah, look at creatures that say, when this creature attacks.
Yeah, that's going to be there. True. Yeah, okay. So it's going to be an attack trigger. This is a... Yeah, I read this card and I was like, I think this is going to do something, but I haven't got the brain power yet to work out what.
It definitely has hidden potential. It's a very green card.
I thought it was a very Simic card.
Yeah, it could be Simic, right?
It's like the other one, the Worldbreaker... Worldbreaker? Not Worldbreaker. The Endbringer that you mentioned, Phil, I thought was very Is It? And this felt very Simic to me.
Yeah, I was thinking of that avatar that once you cast it, all creatures you cast become a copy of it. It's a 6/6. I don't remember its name, sorry.
Yes, the one that comes with Infinite Reflections already on it, essentially.
Yeah.
Yeah. And even if you like Mirror Entity, you can go for this guy. And he's got a fancy hat.
Yep, fancy hat. This is a fancy hat set, isn't it?
It's Kozilek's well into fancy hat.
We're going to have two fancy hat sets in a row.
We're going to have tricorns. And
yeah.
It's going to be pointy hats all around.
Pointy hats all around.
I own not one, but two tricorns. Anyway, what's my next card?
No, you don't. You don't own that. Because if you owned it, you would post a picture.
Oh, I'll prove it. Fine.
And in the meantime, what's your next card?
Continuing my traditional theme of being the mono red guy, honest, I've picked another mono red card, which is Goblin Dark Dwellers.
Yeah, are you shifting colors? What's going on?
Maybe I'm going back to Grixis and away from Esper. I've not built a Grixis deck in yonks, but maybe I should. Anyway, Goblin Dark Dwellers is 3 and 2 red. For a creature goblin. It's a 4/4, which is super beefy for a goblin. It has Dennis the Menace, which means it needs two creatures at least to block it. And it says, when Goblin Dark Dwellers enters the battlefield, You may cast target instant or sorcery card with converted mana cost 3 or less from your graveyard without paying its mana cost. If that card we put into your graveyard this turn, exile it instead. So, and I have just noticed that my first three picks have all been very keyed into Izzity kind of themes.
Yeah, really?
That was purely by accident.
Are you secretly building a Melek deck?
Melek is secretly the most powerful commander ever printed.
I have yet to see you prove that.
You might be waiting a while.
It's pretty much a Grixis deck. You should try brewing that.
No. Don't. It can't be done.
On the same note, whenever I try to brew a Mizzix deck, I end up wanting to brew Jaleva more instead.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, see? It needs black. Anyway, I 100% agree with you, Nate. So Goblin Dog,
Mizzix, if you like X spells, then Mizzix is the way to go. But if otherwise, Jaleva's better.
I don't necessarily know she's better. Depends what your definition of better is. I don't think she's as... like, Mizzix is a one-trick pony, whereas Jaleva interacts with the table a lot. I mean, you're casting other people's spells that interacts with the table so much. Whereas Mizzix is kind of like what Jared Golgari Lich Lord was for me, which is, I'm playing a game of solo magic over here. You guys better win before I do.
Right.
Whereas Jaleva feels very much like you're playing with your opponents rather than playing against your opponents. So she's better and she's more fun.
Well, you very much are using your opponent's resources against them with a Jaleva deck.
Yeah, yeah. And most Jaleva decks put more cards than just the commander in that use your opponent's cards. So you have Praetor's Grasp and Beacon of Unrest and all that sort of stuff. But Goblin Dark Dwellers. There's a 4/4 goblin. It's a creature goblin, which is very popular. People like goblins, don't they, Nate?
Yeah, Nate.
These are some expensive goblins.
Yeah, these are.
They are expensive, but they're 4/4, which sometimes you need. And the spell. Can anyone think of any really good red instant sorceries that cost 3 or less that you might want to cast? This reuses my Wheel of Fortune is the first thing that sprung to my head. Or what's the other Wheel of Fortune light card called? Winds of Change.
Yeah, but it exiles it.
Yeah, but what else are you doing with it? Are you sitting there with no cards in your hand, other than a Goblin Dark Dwellers, and you go, I really want to cast these Goblin Dark Dwellers and refill my hand, but it's going to exile the Wheel of Fortune.
Yeah, I would point never taken. Do that.
I really need to get rid of that artifact that's on the table that's shafting me, and I've got nothing in my hand that can do it, but I've got take your pick, a Vandal Blast in my graveyard, but it does exile it. I just think it's value. It is an expensive goblin, so it might not fit into every goblin deck, but I think that it's just got so much utility. And is this another deck that goes in, a card that goes into Mizzix and Ismizzit and Izzit colours? We like cards that recast things from graveyards for free, basically. And this is a good one in a colour that doesn't do that too often. I know they've pushed it in red a bit more in recent sets.
I have a single word for you that will make this card seem even better.
Go on then.
Overload. Because you have a Vandal Blast in your graveyard, you drop this guy and you overload the Vandal Blast.
Click, clack, boom.
Yeah.
Doesn't say red either. I've got a better word for you. Cyclonic Rift.
Yep, exactly. Right? That's what I'm saying.
It's not that many people play with Cyclonic Rift either.
No, it's not very common. We might be single-handedly driving the price of that card up too, by the way.
I think it's one of the more expensive pre-orders. Now, I don't tend to pre-order cards because those prices shift very quickly. Unless I see something which I think is obviously underpriced, I'll pre-order a few.
Oh, I mean Cyclonic Rift.
Cyclonic Rift. Yeah. The format's made that price because it's not played in any other format, really.
Yeah. And this card, Dark Dwellers, I think, is going to be popular in a number of different formats.
Do you think the artwork on Goblin Dark Dwellers is a reference back to the set The Dark? It just reminds me of that kind of like weird alien looking goblin. There was some stuff in The Dark that had similar art.
It kind of looks like Dragon Fodder.
Yeah. One
of the versions of Dragon Fodder.
Yeah.
Yep. I like that they're blind kind of cave goblins.
Yeah. Like Mexican cavefish. Got their eyes have evolved over. Although we shouldn't talk about evolution, should we?
No, you already called it evolution. That's fine.
evolution with an eye, an extra eye. Anyway, moving swiftly along to Phil's next pick.
It's Deep Fathom Skulker.
Mm.
For 5 and a blue. Yeah, we're doing the expensive Eldrazi. A 4/4 Eldrazi. Devoid, as Nate would say, whatever. Whenever a creature you control deals combat damage to a player, you may draw a card. And for 3 and a colorless, target creature can't be blocked this turn. So, in a lot of ways, I mean, it's more expensive and it has the activation of cost. Yeah, it's a
Simic Eldrazi.
Yeah, yeah. It really works kind of like an Edric and like the various rogues that let you draw a card when they hit. Except this is a 4/4. And it can make other creatures unblockable too.
So what two themed cards is this put together? I spotted it instantaneously. Two cards that are in story wise and theme wise the same. This is Thassa, God of the Sea, and the Bident of Thassa on one card. With adjusted costs, because that first ability is, well, sorry, the second ability devoids the first. That second ability is what the Bident does.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
And it's got four arms.
Oh, and it does. And it's it seems to be rolling up on or rolling away from some sort of corpse of a giant sea creature.
Yeah. Everyone likes card draw. Everyone likes creatures being unblockable. Everyone likes 4/4s.
Who doesn't like a 4/4?
Yeah, I remember back in the day, a 4/4 flyer with vigilance was. One of the best creatures you could possibly ever dream for.
Yeah. Nate, what's your next card?
My next card is Flaying Tendrils. 1 and black. Sorcery, devoid, whatever. All creatures get -2/-2 until end of turn. And if a creature would die this turn, exile it instead. So this goes in many of my decks. If you like Anger of the Gods in red, here is the black version.
Yeah, it's also, what was the Theros block card?
That Drown is? In Sorrows.
That's it, Drown in Sorrows.
Apart from this, instead of scrying, it lets you exile the creatures that it kills.
Yeah, it sounds like an upgrade.
Exiling creatures is the important part.
Yeah, because you can always play this after combat.
It's until the end of turn as well, so this can, if you've got enough mana, you can crack this out before doing a board wipe.
Yeah.
Turn your Toxic Deluge into a Merciless Eviction.
Oh, God, it's going to be miserable playing against you.
You took the Nate, I presume.
Yes.
Yeah, I assumed that.
Oh.
He's the expert of exiling stuff that would go into your graveyard. Nate. Stop ruining mine and Phil's graveyard fun.
Yeah,
we
really.
Love hanging out in the dirt, and you stop that.
Nope.
Oh.
Boo.
Well, I thought we were making headway there for a minute.
Interesting. I think Nate's the only one out of any of us. Oh, no, Phil. I was going to say that picked a card with a lower than rare rarity, but... No, Phil, you also did. So just me who likes his rare cards.
Well, you are elite. You're one of the British elite, after all. Which is redundant, I recognize.
One of the... we'll bring it back. Anyway, the British elite runs our country. They all went to the same school in the same class.
Yes, they did.
No coincidence in that, yeah.
Right. So speaking of British elite...
so what set would it be that I didn't have to pick a black card as one of my top fives?
It would have to be a set with no black cards.
It would, yeah. So my favorite black card that hasn't already been mentioned or isn't already going to be mentioned by someone else is the Sifter of Skulls. 3 and a black for a creature, Eldrazi. 4/3. It's devoid. Meh, who cares? Whenever another non-token creature you control dies, put a 1/1 colorless Eldrazi Scion token onto the battlefield that has sacrifices creature to add a waste mana to your mana pool, colorless mana. So, not ultimately brilliant, but a lot of my black decks have the strategy of sacrificing, so this is just value town for your, all your sacrifice decks. This create, like, every time you sack a creature to whatever shenanigans you're trying to do with your sacrifice creatures, you know, there's so many in black, you're getting a token. Okay, you can't get another token by sacrificing the first token, but there are other sacrifice matters cards which don't care whether the creature you're sacrificing is a token or not. So you're kind of doubling up the amount of creatures you have to fire off things like Grave Pact. And this card combos beautifully with Battle for Zendikar's Smothering Abomination, which means every time you lose a non-creature token, you draw a card, get an Eldrazi Scion, can sack it to get another mana, and then draw another card.
And
I would consider this card for Shadowborn Apostles decks.
Ooh, yeah.
Wow, that's high praise.
Yeah.
Because then you get 6 Eldrazi Scions every time you summon a demon.
Yeah, and that means you can hardcast some of your demons as well. If you run out of ways, people have stopped you getting your apostles back.
Yeah, that happens.
It goes well into a green-black deck with Catacomb Sifter.
Oh,
right,
does
that's
it?
Yeah, that's the the Battle for Zendikar uncommon Eldrazi drone 2/3. Right, that you basically get to scry one whenever another creature you control dies, not just a permanent non-token.
I think this goes into Merrin.
Yeah. Yep.
Cuz you're going to get your experience counters up fast, and yeah, there you go.
Yeah. It's good stuff.
Not too much to say about that other than value town. Phil, what's your
final pick before we get into some other types of card discussions here? Pulse of Murasa for 2 and a green. It's an instant. It's a common. What am I doing? Oh yeah, at instant speed, I can return target creature or land card from a graveyard to its owner's hand and gain 6 life. So,
what? And gain 6 life?
I know. That's just the gravy, though. It's that instant speed, end of turn regrowth, and then untapping with all of your mana, having all of that available to cast the, say, Terastodon that you brought back, or Hornet Queen.
Replay your homeward path.
Yep, after it's been destroyed by a certain Silumgar control player. Yeah, so really not too much to say about that. It's just... it's a neat, high-value instant card, and the 6 life is kind of gravy. It almost makes it like a +1 ability on a Planeswalker that has 6 loyalty counters.
It's great.
Yeah.
And it's common as well. So, yeah very, very good and very available. It will be cheap, cheap, cheap.
All right. Nate, what is your next card?
My top pick for the set for 2 and black. It's Kalitas. Traitor of Getz. It's a legendary creature, vampire warrior, 3/4. He's got lifelink, that's okay. Hey, if a non-token creature an opponent controls would die, instead, exile that card and
Jesus, Nate.
Put a 2/2 black zombie creature token onto the battlefield. Hey, there's more. 2 and a black, sacrifice another vampire or zombie token. Put 2+1 counters on Kalitas, Traitor of Get. It doesn't have to be a zombie token, but I'm just saying. So this also goes into many of my decks. The warm smell of Kalitas, Traitor of Get. He doesn't have flying, so he's not rising up through the air. And how many times have I told you guys that your cards are not allowed in my game?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, believe me.
Exile those cards, please.
I have genuinely fallen asleep, like, fretting over how to get around your Leyline of the Void and Moriaki Debris. It's just, this sounds like I'm kidding. I'm not. I lay there, I'm like, how am I going to deal with this? Oh, God.
You could just dismantle all your graveyard matters decks.
Yeah.
That's where he's driven you to.
It's not fair, Nate.
Don't make me sell my Yorgmoth's will, Nate. Don't make me sell it.
I love playing Traumatize when Leyline of the Void is out. Oh. It's awesome.
See, weirdly, yeah, because Traumatize is a card I use often.
Yeah, it is.
Many times in the same game. And if you're playing with one of those graveyard destruction decks, I don't mind. It just means I have to rethink about how I'm going to win. I have to win through pure mill, so it makes it harder for me. I'm not going to win by milling one player, then abusing that graveyard to kill everyone else with those creatures. Although Traumatize won't work with Kalitas because it's only if the creature dies.
No, but it works with Leyline of the Void.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And Rest in Peace and all those horrendous things. I'm amazed.
And Planar Void.
Nate, why have you never done an Anafenza of the Foremost deck?
Oh, he has.
I've
no,
never
actually,
seen.
I haven't.
Yeah, I thought you did that before you settled on Mariaki, no?
Nope.
Well, there you go. Nate, there's your next project if I'm doing Melek. Well, they're saying that's unfair because Melek sucks and Anafenza actually has potential. So, back on topic. Kalitas. When I saw this card spoiled, I immediately went, oh, I can build. But, oh, no, that's a Nate card.
Yeah, I did the same thing. Yeah.
I'll let Nate play in the Kalitas wheelhouse before I try.
That's my head crab.
Love the artwork on it as well.
Yeah.
I love it because the name and the artwork, it's like, oh, in the story, he's just submitted. He's just bent over and let that head crab get right up on there.
Yeah, and in the previous version, you're looking at his back, and he's looking over his shoulder, like he's still deciding what to do.
Yep. In the story, the Gets were like the most oppressed vampire clan. What's her face? Drana. Had, like, her clan, who were the most ascended vampire clan, like, oppressed the hell out of the Get. And Kalitas was salty about that, to the extent that he just went, sod it.
Yeah.
Ulamog's my friend. Although, weirdly, he's an Ulamog lineage card in a Kozilek-focused set.
Well, so is Sifter of Skulls.
That is true.
Yeah. There are a couple of them in here.
Yeah, that's true. But Kalitas was the black card I alluded to before, which I think is objectively the best black card in this set. And I might agree with Nate that it's one of my favorites for the set.
Yeah.
Right up there.
As a mythic rare, it kind of deserves that slot, too.
Yes. Shall I move on to my?
You shall. You know, you were incorrect. You've betrayed the British elite.
I realized that as I looked at it. I just presumed this card was rare because the card it's just like is a rare, which is Meddling Mage. So the card I've chosen is as my favorite for the set, and one that I'm going to make Phil and Nate groan every time they see me cast it. Is Reflector Mage. So Reflector Mage is unbelievably an uncommon, I presumed it's rare, is a 1 and an Azurius, so a white and a blue, for a 2/3 creature human wizard. When Reflector Mage enters the battlefield, return target creature an opponent controls to its owner's hand. That creature's owner can't cast spells with the same name as the creature until your next turn. So not the most powerful thing in the world, just very useful. So it's got a very white ability and a very blue ability. It's combining Manowar and Nevermore at the same time. Hey, that rhymes. But this goes into my Brago deck and absolutely abuses the hell out of my opponents. It just keeps stalling the table.
It goes into every Azorius control deck. Does it not?
I think you need to flicker it because it's only on the next turn that spell can't be recast. If it just locked out as a Nevermore, I think I'd go in everyone. But I think you need anything where you're going to be able to be bringing it back in and over again.
Right. At the same time, Restoration Angel, Revelar.
That's true. That's true.
Right.
This needs to be used more aggressively than those, though, because it only goes to your opponent's stuff.
No, I mean, Restoration Angel. I mean, those creatures recur this, or...
Oh, I see what you mean. Yeah. Sorry. Yeah, the Reveil Arc. I mean, if you get Reveil Arc and Karmic Guide going as a two-card loop, which is an abusive two-card.
Don't forget
loop.
Mirror Entity.
Oh, Mirror Entity. Wonderful man. Yeah, I mean... Yeah, I just like this card. I can see ways of abusing it. Any card where when I cast it, it makes you feel go, ugh.
Yeah, don't forget this has a home in Rune.
Oh, wait, Phyrexian Metamorph, too.
Oh, yeah, it does bring back a Metamorph. Metamorph copy. Yeah. Do you see what I mean?
Speaking a card of where it's... making Phil groan.
You completely broke up there. I didn't hear anything you said. So
me or Nate?
Yeah, sorry. Yeah. Go on.
Right.
See, I'm a step behind the joke. Sorry. One of these days, we're going to record a Phyrexian special. It will be when Phil's on and like vacation or something.
it'll be when I'm already hospitalized and you want to kill me.
This week on The Commander Inn, we pull the plug on Phil's life support machine and discuss Phyrexia.
Yeah, it'll be great. I'll be on the heart monitor listening to the latest episode and suddenly, flatline.
One day, when we return to Phyrexia in a set, you're going to... What are you going to do, Phil? Are you just going to have to hardline take a stance of whatever's fighting the Phyrexians?
Well, they've established already what to do, right? With Battle for Zendikar, it's pretty clear that they will set the winning denizens of goodness and light and bringing everybody together for a kumbaya against those despicable distortions of reality.
But the question is, who are the Phyrexians going to fight against? Because if it's Phil. Not the Eldrazi, the new set... Phyrexia versus DeLuca.
Every card, every warrior has a beard, even the women. Oh, God. All right.
Anyway, sorry, I'm just making myself up. So, Reflectomage, see, the fact that it's making us have that conversation where we're going, what would you do? What could it abuse? That's the kind of card I really love. One which inspires, maybe that brings out my inner Johnny. Yeah, although I'm sure you two would say I'm a spike.
I agree. It's going to have a home in a lot of Flicker decks, but also I think, like Nate said, it's just a nice solid card in a blue-white Azorius. How many times do we just want a one-turn break from whatever creature, you know, is giving us hives at the moment? So
yeah, it's like a Lavinia card.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah, gets rid of that Prophet of Crucifix in time for people to.
Yeah.
To react to it hold the count. It was what you do, what you really do with it, if we're honest, is you bounce a problem creature and you hold a counter spell knowing it's going to come back in two turns.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, all sorts of ways. Or then you pick a card from their hand and exile that or discard that. And yeah.
I have been known to hold a Pact of Negation in my hand as well. So
as long as you've got the mana.
Hey, I've only seen one person ever die to their own Pact of Negation, and that was Listener Pete, who forgot that he didn't have two blue mana sources out.
Oh God!
He had five mana.
No, we did. That it did happen another time, but we gave that person a pass.
Oh, really?
Yeah, you gave that person a pass.
Who, me?
No, that we were playing against Donald Miner.
Oh yeah.
Ah, that wasn't me then. You let Donald Miner off.
Yeah, he used his Pact of Negation against whatever I was doing at the time, and then he forgot to have mana after he did his stuff on his next turn, and Phil decided to let him live.
Oh,
we voted, didn't we?
Yeah,
well, obviously
yeah,
he's not
going to
vote for. I'm not in this game.
I was the minority vote at the time because I was winning.
I wasn't going to bring that up.
Did you tell him he needs to packed up his deck and go home?
No, we played it out. It was cool.
I need to save puns like that for next time we have Sheldon on, don't
I? Yeah,
He loves puns.
He loves
anyway, puns. That concludes our top five picks, I believe.
Right. So what we're going to do now is something we often forget. We're going to go through all the legendary creatures in the set.
Good idea.
And kind of evaluate them. It's probably enough to say whether or not they're commander or relegated to the 99, or we don't even use them. And so the first card is one we've already talked about. I won't go into it. It's Kozilek the Great Distortion. So are we building decks with Kozilek as the commander?
I am not.
I have thought about doing a colorless deck with one of the Titans as my commander, but I can't see why I wouldn't have Ulamog Ceaseless Hunger. Or the other Kozilek, Butcher of Truth.
Yeah, the Butcher of Truth is definitely a better card than this. I'd say it goes into the 99, though.
Yes. Yeah, this is going into my Crudrazi deck. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I would say it not goes into my 99.
Really?
Really.
Because of the two diamond mana in the casting cost?
He doesn't do what I want him to do for 10 mana.
Which is pretty much end the game.
Right.
That's
right?
What they always
say. Yeah, he comes out and he spends the next few turns maybe countering things.
He doesn't show up and
wreck the board.
I ignore those the third ability. It's the first ability, the card draw. So I'm going to put him in Crudrazi because the Crudrazi deck has no problem finding the colorless mana because it scrubs all my mana and my mana pool into colorless at the end of the phase, doesn't it? So I can always cast him in my second main phase, regardless of what mana source I have out. And he'll just replace an Eldrazi Devastator, which is just an 8-8 trampler. You know, he's just an upgrade on an already existing Eldrazi for me. Card draw, man. Card draw.
But for 10 mana, he should wreck the board immediately. See, that's why I like Jaleva, because she just shows up, flies up to someone, flicks him on the ear, and wrecks the board. Here's one damage. Boom.
So I would say not as a commander in my 99, but I coincidentally own a deck that he fits into perfectly. I wouldn't just put him into the 99 of any deck, whereas I would put Butcher of Truth into the 99 of any deck.
Butcher of Truth, sure.
Butcher of Truth also stops you getting milled to death as well.
Yeah.
Yes.
Right, so Kozilek the Great Distortion is a maybe in the 99 and probably not as a commander.
Yeah, I think you need a lot of synergy in your deck to get his third ability going.
Yeah.
12-12 with Menace is okay, though. Why hasn't he got Annihilator? That's what I'm asking. Next, anyway.
Yeah.
So he is two turns of commander damage.
Yep, that's true.
The next card is a card people have been asking for ages.
Yes. And, well, why don't you continue with it?
So it's General Tazri. 4 and a white for a legendary creature, human ally. She is a 3/4. When General Tazri enters the battlefield, you may search your library for an ally creature card, reveal it, and put it into your hand and shuffle your library. Fantastic. And here's the bit people really wanted. For Wooburg, so one of each color, allied creatures you control get +X/+X until end of turn, where X is the number of colors amongst those creatures. Now, the ability itself wasn't what people are asking for. The fact that it's Wooburg gives it the commander's color identity. It's a Wooburg commander for allies.
Yep, correct.
People wanted that. Now, I know Nate's going specifically with the Mardu route, and I think for very good reason, but this is a great commander. I think this is going to be a build-around commander for ages. It's take an archetype. They finally allowed people to play an archetype which they previously could not play.
I agree. 5-color allies does. It is. This is your general for it.
Yep.
This is your general for 5-color allies. I'm personally not interested in 5-color allies, though.
So what? let's imagine you were. What do we think? If you were building this deck, the General Tazri deck, what do we think of the two abilities?
The second ability is honestly probably not as good as what a coat of arms would be at the same time.
Yeah.
It kind of does a small mirror entity, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. It does give you a bonus if you need that extra push. It's Craterhoof Behemoth-y in its impact. Is that a acceptable term?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's a good adjective.
I'll tell you what it is. It's Beastmaster Ascension, isn't it? Because you don't get the trample, but Beastmaster Ascension doesn't give you the trample either.
It could be a Beastmaster Ascension.
And it depends on how many colors of allies you have on the board at the same time.
Yeah, if you just cast her on herself, her color identity doesn't check her own ability. So the best she's doing if she's out there is giving yourself +1/+1 for Wooburg, which isn't good.
Yeah, basically this is a giant or titanic growth for 5 mana for your entire team.
Yeah, and you can tutor an ally, which tutor is always very good.
Yeah, so there'll be you have to assume that she'll be a 5-color ally deck with some kind of flicker component so that you can reuse her and get the toolbox ally that you need.
Although she is your commander, so you'll probably cast her on average maybe twice a game.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not so, enough.
And so I think she's the opposite of Kozilek in that she is always going to be your commander and never be in the 99.
That's right. Always the bride, never the bridesmaid in this case.
Yes, lucky Tazri. She gets to wear a pretty dress.
So Ethan Fleischer, who our listeners realize was on one of our recent shows. Ethan Fleischer is, he tweeted on Wednesday. He's like, I'm going to build the world's first Tazri deck. I've earned it. So I can't wait to see what that list looks like. Hopefully he's done brewing, because tomorrow, actually already by today, people have acquired Tazri and are building with her.
Yep. Maybe I'll get one at my pre-release, which I'm going to in about 4 hours.
Oh, cool. Would one of you like to read Linvala?
I think Nate should read Linvala.
Linvala, the Preserver. 4 white-white, legendary creature angel. 5/5, flying, of course. When Linvala, the Preserver, enters the battlefield, if an opponent has more life than you, you gain 5 life.
Woo.
Also, when Linvala enters the battlefield, if an opponent controls more creatures than you, put a 3/3 white angel creature token with flying onto the battlefield. Hey, do you have a flicker deck? You might want to look at Linvala, the Preserver.
This will stabilize the board, won't it, if you have a flicker deck? And you're behind.
Yes. I'm trying to think of reasons not to put it into Brago.
Yeah. The only real reason is she's mythic rare, and it might take a little while to get her.
Yeah, and I get a feeling... Oh, she's 6 mana, so I don't know if she's going to be in standard very much. And she's not going to be played in modern.
No, and she's only particularly useful when you're losing.
Yeah, I bet she's not going to pre-order for much. I bet she's relatively cheap. Although maybe she's going to have a couple of pounds added onto her because her name's Linvala.
Well, you say losing, but in the same sense, you could argue that land tax is only useful when you're losing in terms of mana sources.
Kind of.
Yeah, I play with life as a resource for drawing cards normally, so I don't really see it as losing.
Yeah, but if there are multiple opponents, then you look at if an opponent has more life than you, you gain life. If an opponent controls more creatures than you, and there are 3 other opponents, put a 3/3 white angel on the battlefield.
It's true. It's true. She is, by the way, pre-ordering right now for $6.44.
That's a lot.
Yeah.
That'll come right down. Don't pre-order it for that much, people.
No.
See, the third ability, sorry, the final one, we get the angel. It switches itself off. So, because the creature's going to check again. Like, I'm flickering her. The creature's going to eventually check and say, well, I've just matched your board state with 3/3 angels. And then it stops working.
Yeah.
And the... if I get one, I'll try it. No one likes fighting against the Brago deck anyway, so it keeps losing because everyone hates on it. It suffers with Rafikism a bit. And I'm not even running it as a 75. I'm not even running it as a non 75% deck.
She actually will probably pay off in our format quite a bit. The life total will probably stabilize right pretty quickly. But if you're flickering her just for the 3/3 angel, I mean. Think of a dedicated token deck.
Yeah, true.
You could flicker her all day.
But a dedicated token deck shouldn't normally have less creatures than an opponent.
That's what I mean.
Shouldn't normally have more creatures than an opponent. I think tokens, you tend to have a lot of creatures out, so you're not going to be able to get the angel. She's not going to work.
No. She's not in.
Oh, against the dead. Oh, sorry, I misunderstood. Yeah. Yes, you are right. Against the token deck, you're probably going to be just fine.
Yep.
Anyway.
All right.
99 commander or bin?
Oh, I think she's a 99.
Yeah, she goes into the 99 in a lot of flicker decks. Does your deck flicker? Then look at Linval the Preserver.
Yeah, I don't think you're ever going to see this as a commander.
No, maybe in her sister.
Not seriously. Her twin sister.
Yeah, her twin sister. Linvala.
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 We've discussed Kalitas, but so Kalitas, commander 99 or not at all?
Yes.
Yes to
99 in a lot of decks. I don't think I would use him as commander though, because there are better vampires in my opinion.
Not commander as of a zombie tribal?
Of a zombie tribal. That's
Yeah, I think
that made him think. I love it when I make Nate think.
Okay, I'll get back to you on that.
There are certain sounds I like to try and get out of Nate, and that's my favorite one. I didn't think about it that way.
Yeah.
And then normally he comes back and beats me to death with the end product of that thought process. So, you know.
And so when I say I'll get back to you on that.
Yeah, it normally means about 40 times in the face. Yeah. I think this is a legitimate commander and will go in the 99 of a lot of decks as well.
I agree.
So, great card. Ali, we've also discussed, and I think it's both commander and 99, guys. Ali, sorry. Not Ali.
Yeah, she's basically interchangeable if you're making a Karloff deck, in my opinion.
Yep.
And I would consider her as a possible second tier Shadowborn Apostles deck.
Yes. I like the fact they've made exile target thing a Orzhov ability, and she builds into that. She's great. I might build a dedicated Ali deck that isn't just my Karloff deck. I like her that much. Although I am running out of Orzhov mana sources in my card collection.
Whatever you do, don't start using Guild Gates or the new Uncommon Guild Gates.
I played a Guild Gate recently and had the royal piss taken out of me for the remainder of the night. So,
have you learned your lesson?
If by learn my lesson, did I take the Guild Gates out of that deck? No. If learn my lesson as in probably should take it out of the deck, then yes. Anyway, we have a couple more commanders. Jory N. Ruin Diver. Do you want to read this one, Phil?
I really don't.
We did discuss this one, or sorry, we, on our daily show.
Yeah, on the dailies. For one, a blue and a red, you get a 2/3 merfolk wizard. Whenever you cast your second spell each turn, draw a card. So it has to be the second spell. It's not the third. It's not the first. It's not the fourth, fifth, or sixth. So it's not going to work.
Fifth
storm.
Is way off.
Yeah, fifth is. And fifth is right out. And, whatever. I don't see.
He's still handy in a Mizzix deck.
Yeah, absolutely. She's going to work out well in support of superior red-blue generals like Melek and Mizzix. And, yeah.
Is Melek to this podcast the antithesis of what Hornet Queen is to this podcast?
Yes. Oh, Melek. Melek, Melek, Melek.
He's the Kylo Ren of Sith Lords.
I love Kylo. Anyway, we're not getting into that.
Yeah, we cannot get into that. That is a black hole. We're going to record. So we're going to record an episode where we have Revenge of the Nate.
Episode 7.2, Revenge of the Nate. Oh, where you'll just hear me go, put your foot up. For an hour, yep.
Yep.
I have a problem with the artwork of Jorianne very quickly. I know it's meant to be coral helm armor, but because of the way it's drawn, it looks like she's got a head crab on, like Kalitas. That's good.
Yeah.
And that is a art mistake because she doesn't have a head crab on.
She's a merfolk, so she has regular crab armor.
Yeah, exactly. It's coral helm armor, regular crab armor. Whatever way, she's walking sideways.
That is a very good point, because we're in a set, maybe not this one, but we're in a block in which that particular piece of art reflects domination by Ulamog.
And she has not been dominated by Ulamog. She's one of the allies in the Uncharted Realms.
Or has she?
Why doesn't she say ally then?
Shut up, Nate, with your logic and your reading cards and pointing out obvious mistakes. Tell him a mum on you.
She's not a worshipper of Ula?
She is, isn't she? Or she was.
Okay, so what we've done here is we've taken my point, deconstructed it, and immediately dismissed it using facts. You could prove anything with facts, can't you?
That's how arguing works.
Prove anything with facts. I prefer to go on blind opinion. Bastards. Right, okay, moving on. Is she in the Commander 99? Or not at all?
She's in the 99 for some other cards.
I don't see her going anywhere except as Mizzix's lieutenant, honestly.
Yeah, and Mizzix has better lieutenants.
I'm going to put her in Maelstrom Wanderer because that has a habit of costing more than one spell a turn due to Cascade.
So you'll get one or two cards off her.
I'll get one card off her.
That is a good point, though.
In theory.
Ethereum Horn Sorcerer and Jorianne.
Yeah, any Cascade cards. Yeah, if I get one, I won't actively buy one. If I get one, I will swap this for some other sort of bland utility card in my Maelstrom Wanderer deck and just see how it plays. And if I don't like it, I'll take it out, because that's what we do.
Yep. Okay.
Anyway, our last legendary creature for this.
So, Nate, 99 or
sorry,
not?
Yeah.
Conditionally, 99.
Our last legendary creature is Mina Enden Wildborn, which Nate read when she was spoiled in Russian. For 2 and a red and a green, you get a legendary elf ally creature. 4/4, you may play an additional land on each of your turns. And for red and a green, return a land you control to its owner's hand. Target creature gains trample until end of turn.
It's so good.
Yeah, that's quite good. But is she 99 or commander good?
She's commander good, in my opinion.
She is commander good. Or he and she. He's kind of off in the back there doing some kind of weird wildling thing.
I still agree with, I can't remember if it was you or Nate, saying that I bet this was just called Mina Wildborn, and someone went, nah, there's another guy in the background art, we need to change his name. But this, I really think this could be a good build around Commander. That first ability, you play in a different land each of your turns, is Oracle of Moldiah, levels of good. The return of land you control to its own hand, target creature gains trample, is going to make... Hey, does Gruul like to play big-ass creatures?
Maybe.
I would put this in the 99, in Borborygmos, Enraged. I'm not impressed enough with green allies to make this a commander.
I didn't even think about it as an ally. I thought about it as a abusing Enter the Battleplay triggers on lands card. Because there are a lot of cool Enter the Battlefield triggers on lands. Yeah. It also means people can't, if you just leave a couple of mana up, people can't kill your Maze of Iths and your Homeward Paths and your, I don't know, Kessig Wolf Runs or Skarg Rage Pits.
Yeah, and you could throw out Colony Garden and get a bunch of 0/1 plant tokens.
It's true. I see them as both a commander and kind of a landfall deck, and because green red landfall is actually pretty decent. And of course, in the 99 for other land, for other land related commanders like Angry Omnath and Angry Omnath.
I'm thinking of rebuilding. I was literally the other day rebrewing my Ataka World render deck because my paper meta has gone very fast and gruelly at the moment, and I'm playing a different game, it feels like. So this will go in that. I'm not sure whether I'll cut Course of Crucifix for it. I think it's slightly better than Course of Crucifix, or cut something else, but this is absolutely going in that. Ramp, 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 ramp.
So that's the last of our legendary creatures. I added a little section here, guys. I don't know if you've had an opportunity to take a look at it. But I'm calling these standout cards because there are a couple of cards that I think are just worth calling out that for their artwork. I'm not trying to do a cutest card necessarily, although I think...
Yes, you are.
My
cutest
card.
This is the Eldrazi with pretty pictures category.
Although I think the first one is a genuinely legitimate good card and nearly made my top fives list.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
I'm pleased we're talking about it.
It's Thought Not Seer. Thought Not. So it's three in a colorless, and when Thought Not Seer enters the battlefield, target opponent reveals his or her hand, you choose an online card from it and exile that card. So you bounce it with the Meddling Mage wannabe in here, and then you exile it. Boom. When Thought Not Seer leaves the battlefield, target opponent draws a card. So, yeah, you're kind of replacing that card. Whatever. This card has an eyeball on it. A giant eyeball. And this is the card I most wish were a plush doll.
Yeah, it's like Fnungafnir, whatever that little plush demon thing, was an Eldrazi. He would be this.
Fibblethip.
Fibblethip. If Fibblethip was an Eldrazi, he'd be this.
Yep.
Although, because of its name, I think this should be like the snarky, slacker Eldrazi. Thought not.
Yeah. Yeah, that's exactly it. It has a decent body, 4/4, but again, big eyeball.
I wish it was a 2/2 and one mana less to cast. I could hear Ethan Fleischer saying, yes, but that's not the card we designed.
That's awesome. So these next cards I want to call out tell a story through their artwork. I just thought this was really neat because we saw the last card, Warping Whale, first. And I pointed that out to my wife. I'm like, that looks like a Felidar Sovereign, right? And we may have actually talked about it too, guys. I don't recall now. But then they released Kozilek Shrieker, which is that creature. It's just kind of standing there and it shrieks, and it's clearly part of the creature from Warping Whale. And it turns out it's the front, because then in the card that we identified as Dominator Will Eldrazi, when it was in Japanese, which is the Eldrazi Obligator, it's fusing itself to a Felidar Sovereign.
And so, or is the Felidar Sovereign getting distorted in Kozilek's presence to just be like warped to become the, rather than fusing itself? I think it is just the Felidar Sovereign transforming, being mutated.
It exists as the Shrieker.
Yeah, I think the Obligator is the first card of the three card cycle.
No, the Shrieker is its own creature. The Eldrazi.
Oh,
Obligator.
Yeah, I see the Whooping Whale and the. Okay, sorry. Yeah, I see it now. Yes.
Yes.
Clever man.
Yeah.
So at the time we're recording this, have we seen all the cards yet?
Yes.
Yes.
We've seen all the cards.
No Jace Planeswalker, which surprised me.
Meh.
Which means if you want to play with a Jace in your Oath of the Gatewatch deck, you have to use a Magic Origins one. And be in standard, sorry.
Because I was looking at the background art for Fall of the Titans and Bonds of Mortality, and I was expecting three more cards with that background art.
Why three more? One for each of the other colors not represented? You're buzzing.
Maybe two more colors, since Obnixilus seems to be sitting out this round.
Yeah. Well, this round... There's one card that references Obnixilus, and apparently Chandra is incinerating him or something. But my guess is they think he's incinerated in the story. We'll see that in some Uncharted realms, and then, but he probably planeswalks away. Yeah, Fall of the Titans and Bonds of Mortality are pretty fun Vorthos cards. Those are worth pointing out too.
So I put them next to each other in the show notes for you.
Although, when I did the Daily Show for that covered this one, they're out of order. Because it's Wooberg order. But if you transpose these two cards, if you switch them in the order you have them, Bonds of Mortality, the green card, actually is on the left, and Fall of the Titans, the red card, is on the right.
That's a pretty arbitrary color organization.
It's only arbitrary in 1993. And even then it was set up, you know, so that each of the colors would be enemies of two other colors. And so that order, that Wooberg order, has permeated magic history for evers. And so it's out of order, is what I'm saying.
But I'm saying you're arguing useless semantics.
How
everyone loves arguing semantics.
No, I don't know if you
know. No, it's pronounced pedantic.
In any case, it's very clear that the art is backwards.
I think that they didn't have a piece of art for Bonds of Mortality, and they went, let's just paint over the top of Fall of the Titans. No one will notice.
You see? Look at that. Look at that art now.
It's the same picture, though, isn't it?
It's the same picture.
It would have been cool if they'd done it as...
I just switched the places of them, so yeah, the green one was first now, so that Phil would...
Phil feels better.
Now it's green-red.
That's right.
Wait.
Now it's wrong.
Listeners are enjoying
this. So it was
this.
Correct before.
No, it's wrong both ways.
Listeners are enjoying this visual description of us playing with cards in our digital show notes.
When this finally makes it up to YouTube, they'll see this.
Somehow I doubt that.
All right. So, yes, very cool. So, a final question. This isn't on our show notes, so I'm going to just ask it as a final thing, because that was the last of our...
Well, there's one more...
Oh, sorry, yeah, sorry, there is one more piece of art. Carry on, talk about that one first.
So, Phil, when you were mentioning your top five cards, you did not mention the green Zendikar Resurgent 5 green enchantment. Whenever you tap a land for mana, add 1 mana to your mana pool of any type that land produced. And... whenever you cast a creature spell, draw a card.
Yeah, this is absolutely a great card. It's Mana Reflection with, Primordial Sage stapled onto it.
Yeah, it's a slightly crappier Mana Reflection.
No, it's the same.
No, Mana Reflection.
But you're the green guy.
Mana Reflection's when you tap a permanent for mana. You add 1 mana of any mana.
Oh, yeah, yeah. That's true. That's very true. Yeah, it's not a bad card. And yes, I'm the green guy, and I should have referred that. But I got Eldrazi. I should have pointed this out, but I did get Eldrazi happy.
Yay! Got all nuts with the big colorless creatures. And if you're going to do that in a set, this is the set to do it in, isn't it?
Yeah. I only got one chance at this, Nate.
It was the hats.
It was the hats.
As a finality... how have we, from a commander perspective, just quick thoughts on how have we enjoyed our time back in Zendikar?
Mardu Allies loves it.
Mardu Allies is a thing because of it, I presume. Could you have done it before this set?
Actually, even Vampire Allies is decent enough for Vishkal to grab them all.
Mm.
So Vishkal saying... thank you very much.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Yeah. No, I think it's not just those archetypes or that archetype among those two sets of colors that benefit from this. This is a great set for us.
Yeah, the big colorless stuff is that can be used in multiple decks is... really helpful, really injects a good old dose of difference and power and variance into our format. Now, the cynic out there might say, well, having lots of colours creatures means the format becomes more samey because everyone runs the same things, but they just simply don't, do they? It's not like every deck has a, pick something from BFZ, an end bringer in it, or is going to have an end bringer in it. It's going to be still be specific, but we've got so many new cool options, and it's very exciting. Very exciting.
Yeah, one of the cards I almost mentioned, and if we were still doing honorable mentions, I would have included it, is Oblivion Strike. For 3 and a black, it's a sorcery that has, it's devoid, this card has no color. Exile target creature, so it gets around all those pesky swords and whatnot that give protection from black, right? And we see a lot of those swords, so...
Well, as long as you don't mention that card, Phil, because as you know, we've moved past honorable mentions. No, that's a great card. I didn't even think about that because it's colorless, isn't it? That is a great card.
Yeah, it's slow and it's expensive, but you know when it absolutely positively has to be eliminated.
I run Scour from Existence in decks, so it's faster than that. So,
all right, are we done, gentlemen?
I believe that that concludes our overview of Oath of the Gatewatch and what a marvelous set it is.
Yes. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Ethan Fleischer and Ian Duke, for your work. Ian Duke, of course, is the lead developer for the set. And Ethan Fleischer, our fairly recent guest, was the lead designer.
He was. And he did a grand job.
Yeah, wonderful, wonderful work. Please high-five the team for us. That comes from Morrow. You can ask Morrow to high-five people, and he'll run around the office high-fiving them.
He high-fives their stubby, fingerless hands.
Yes, as we and all know.
If you don't get that joke, listeners, go back and listen to the Ethan Fleischer episode.
Excellent.
How do you feel about our listeners, Phil?
You know, I will speak for us all. We love our listeners. They really like the Ethan Fleischer episode. And so what I would love our listeners to do is tell a friend. Your commander meta does not listen to Commanderin. And you have to show them. No, I know. I know, it drives me crazy.
How do you know?
I have spoken to people who have said their meta does not actually listen to Commanderin. And I'm like, guys... Ladies, you have to tell your friends all about us. So please, tell a friend about us. Give us a 5-star rating on iTunes. That helps us. The more people we have listening to us and the more ratings we have, especially 5-star ratings, the more listeners and 5-star ratings we have, the better, because we can point to those numbers for the people who actually care how many of those we have. We personally exist solely on love.
And food.
Without our community, we couldn't exist. And through you guys is how we're able to do things like bring you interviews with lead designers in on current Magic sets and things, cool things like that. It's because of you guys.
Well said, Sean.
Oh, yeah.
So our theme song was created for the podcast by Mr. Nate Burgess. Thank you, Nate. It's a wonderful theme song. Our logo was created for the podcast by MrPicto.co with assistance from Kelly DeLuca. Thank you, Mr. Picto. It's a wonderful logo. And special thanks to Tech Wizards Jesse Thompson and Graham Frank and to Justin for his server space. Thank you, Justin. It's wonderful server space. I don't know why I did that, guys, but it's done. You can reach us.
You can reach us by going to our website, which is commanderinmtg.com. Our email is cast@commanderinmtg.com. You can find us on Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, mtgcast.com, Reddit, iTunes, and Podbay FM by searching CommanderinMTG Podcast. Individually on Twitter, I'm at Copain26.
I'm at Mr. Plorg.
And I'm at Ketchak.
And that, gentlemen, is our show. Yeah!
He says the news, and it's automatically a string of Nate just going boop 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 boop.
Oh.
I'm going to guess it's going to be about how diamond mana works in Magic. It might be something bigger or better.
I'm guessing mulligans.
Yeah, I think it'll be mulligans and maybe something else, because the mulligans aren't a big deal. But we'll see.
We know they've been playtesting it, so it's a good call from Nate.
Yeah.
So I reckon either of those two things, diamond mana in our format and mulligans. And if it's not either of those two things, once we finish discussing what it actually is, we can ask him about those.
Yeah.
If it's about diamond mana, I'm going to predict, this might be totally wrong, I'm going to predict they're going to change it so mana of other colours doesn't change colour when it goes into your pool. So if I control one of Nate's mountains, I control one of your forest, yeah, it's going to stay green or red when I tap it.
I don't know. That's kind of crazy.
Yeah, exactly. That would be a big change. Yeah. Subtle, but big.
And that might be, that's worthy of this skullduggery and this hinting. And yeah, so we'll probably see that. I don't know.
Which means I'll owe Charles Moreau a retrospective apology after his dreams of power drains the other day.